It's 8223 0000. Starting off the show with a friend of the show. It's Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. Hello, Craig.
Yeah, g'day. Morning, Jeff.
Very interesting thing. Of course, it all happened last week with Julia Gillard and all. And now she's from a place called Barry. It's a funny-sounding place in Wales. And I didn't know this. This is pretty good little bit of trivia here, Craig. And actually, I should have saved this for the SA Trivia Quiz. But Barry in Wales, when you translate it into English, it stands for what? Valley of the Witch.
Yeah, that's right. It's what some of our supporters of the Welsh have made it very clear to us, which is a bit of an omen. It's a bit of a worry.
Julia Gillard from Valley of the Witch. Very funny. Now, yeah. So something's rackled you. Something's got you fired up, Craig?
Well, it's this issue of what Julia Gillard came out and says she's against a big Australia.
That's right.
I mean, she's been captured. Well, she's not really been captured. She's always been part of she's a member of the Fabian Society, basically, which is an operation since the late 19th century to shut down any real economic development, technological development, and they promoted policies through guys like H.G. Wells and so forth of actually reducing the world's population.
Now, are you sure it's actually just not politics? Because it was a very unpopular thing that Kevin Rudd said. Hey, I want a big Australia, let's go for 50 million people, and that was just one of the things that started putting him on the nose in terms of voters. I'm wondering if it was just shrewd politics. She may not even care about what she's saying.
Yeah, look, if the last 40 years you've had a movement of this ecological sustainability, now people, you know, that sounds like an impressive word, and you've got these other things like sustainable population and sustainability, but it's all built on a fraud, and the same... the fraud is built on this idea that human beings are just like animals and that human beings are subject to the laws of carrying capacity, just like rabbits and horses and sheep and other sorts of...
Now, who says that? Who says we're just like animals?
Well, that's what Prince Philip says. Right. It makes it very clear.
Now, he is 90 years old, Craig. You know that.
I know, but he's made many comments over the years.
Right.
When he was much younger man, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I always like to remind people he did say back in 1988, which is, 20 years ago?
Yes.
22 years ago when he was a lot younger. He might have had more marbles back then, but I think he's lost a few since then, of course. But this is when he said he would like to come back as a deadly virus. But he also said, and he argued that man is just another animal who could be culled as necessary, where he said, you know, you cannot keep a flock, a bigger flock of sheep than you're able capable of feeding. There's also, this is based on a bigger fraud. It goes back to the period of Parson Thomas Malthus, who worked for the British East India Company, which is the precursor for the British Empire. Now, the same policies, free trade and globalisation.
Does anything that someone said in the 1800s actually still resonate in 2010?
The principle does. That's what I'm coming back to with this idea of carrying capacity, is people don't actually believe that human beings are any different than animals. And Julia Gillard made it very clear, and I think she's alienated a lot of people now, that she doesn't believe in this concept of God or a God.
Mm.
Now, what makes human beings fundamentally different than animals is that we are endowed with this quality of being able to make the discoveries of the principles that make the universe work. And we can then apply those through science and technology into the economy to transform the way that we live. Now, for the last 40 years, you've had this policy of globalisation, economic rationalism, sustainability. It's all the same thing. All these green policies have shut down any real decent development of infrastructure, of industry. You know,
What about the national broadband network? Isn't that a major leap forward? I thought you'd be championing something like that.
That's useful communications, but it isn't the sort of there's not the sort of industry that we actually require. I mean, look, Jeff,
are you sure? I mean, talk to someone in the bush about their frustration.
Well, of course, it's useful to have decent communications. I mean, there's no argument about that. But what's the use of being able to talk to people when you don't have a job or you don't have the food necessary to be able to eat? And look, here we are in Australia. We have some of the greatest mineral resources in the world, and basically we ship them off overseas for, you know, just a few dollars per ton, and we haven't developed those resources like iron ore or nickel or whatever into value-added products to really provide for further industry and jobs in our country.
Yep. Now, you said that Julia Gillard was a member of the Fabian Society.
That's right. She still is.
Do you have proof of that?
Yes, there's a lot of people that are members of the Fabian Society.
Right, how do you know she's a member of the Fabian Society?
Because they listed membership.
Right.
Right. It's not a non-public organisation. But what most people don't understand about the Fabian Society is that they actually promote this idea of population reduction. They always have, since the 1890s, because it was an operation set up by H.G. Wells as one of the key guys against the massive victory of Lincoln in the United States.
Are you sure it's not just a university drinking club with a few...
No, it's actually much more closely aligned with the British Empire and the British Crown than most people would understand. But look, their commitment was to obliterate modern nation states. Yeah. The idea of tacking science, technology, and infrastructure upon which sovereignty, that is, sovereign nation states, depend. And they're very open about it. I mean, they're open in the sense that they don't want us to uncover the truth about the matter. But look, one of the leading guys that I'm campaigning against actually for this federal election in the seat of Wills is Kelvin Thompson. He's a past president of the Fabian Society, but he's also the poster boy for the Sustainable Population Australia group, which is made up of the patrons of the Australian Conservation Foundation, the same organisation that now says that human population growth, particularly Australia's population growth, should be equated to cane toads and to runaway grasses that have been introduced and those sorts, and rabbits.
Can't we have it all, Craig? Can't we have technological advances and leaps forward in providing for ourselves and food and what have you, infrastructure, and still not have 150 million people squeezed in? Why do we have to have... It always seems to me that you're advocating for more and more and more and more people, and that's necessary to create the positive momentum in Australia that you're agitating for.
There's a term, Jeff, which you have to understand from... which sort of explains what we're talking about in terms of why it's important to have an increasing scientific and technological capability within society. And that's a term that Mr. Lyndon LaRouche, physical economist, determined, which is called a rising potential relative population density. Now, that sounds like a big mouthful, but basically what it says is that if you don't have a rising potential within your population for increasing science and technology to apply to the population, then in fact your population initially will go stagnant and then will collapse.
Now, South Australia has been the... Population-wise, the backwater for Australia forever. Almost every year we lose more people than we gain, yet we bat so much above our weight in terms of technological advances. The number of innovations and explorers and things that come out of South Australia are staggering when you really line them up. Yet, according to Lyndon LaRouche's model, that shouldn't be happening because we don't have a big burgeoning population, you know, with all these great ideas bouncing around because there's so many new people arriving.
Well, we have the capacity. Look, there's a lot of the discoveries in Australia that have been taken offshore, and Australians over the history of our country have had incredible discoveries, like Sunshine Harvester and applications.
So we don't need many more people. Really,
but the point, Jeff, is that we've grown since that process, since the founding of Australia. We've actually grown because we've had that capacity to make these sorts of discoveries. Mm. This idea that the Australian population or this place is overpopulated has only come in as a cultural thing in the last 40 years.
People like lifestyle. That's it. I don't think it's...
Well, I agree with you, and that's why a lot of people are moving to the cities, particularly in these urban areas, is because they like access to services. They want decent hospital care. And if you're going to have a family, you don't want to be 500 kilometres from nowhere, no doctors, no obstetricians or gynaecologists. But see, that's what we don't have in the centre of our country, because we've not had a planned idea of really developing the internal parts of our country with water projects and rail and so forth.
If you did a survey, say you surveyed, and a good robust survey, 3,000 people, and you asked them, now, what's your ideal population of Australia, 25 million or 45 million? What do you reckon most people would say?
Well, most people, if they listen to the media and the massive brainwashing operation they'd say 25.
Now, there's another scientific model called the herd mentality, which sounds bad when you say it like that because it makes us all sound like lemmings and sheep. But when they test things like, I don't know, gerbils and fish, and they make them, put them through a maze, they find that collectively they make the smarter decisions more often as a group than they do individually. You tend to find that individually they all go off in the wrong groups and don't achieve what they set out to. Yet when you put them as a group, and these are things which don't really communicate like people do, but they still somehow manage to achieve what they need to as a group. That, I mean, it's a concept of, as a group, we tend to make the right call more often. So if as a group most people think that a moderate growth is a good thing, shouldn't we be listening to that?
Well, again, what do the people understand about physical economy or actual economy? They look at it from a kitchen table budgetary perspective.
Right.
Now, we've had 30 to 40 years of a policy called globalization, which is a complete transformation, particularly since the war period, of the previous policies. And now, when you have a policy of globalization, it actually is a policy to destroy sovereignty. Coupled with this policy, you've had this radical environmentalism, and coupled with ecological sustainability, with this idea that human beings are basically animals and they're not endowed with this creative capacity to make discoveries.
Mm.
So you've had a cultural change in the population where people don't fully understand the capacity, and they don't share the optimism that they could if they were looking like looking with great wonder of a mankind, for example, going to the moon or to other planets, like there was in the 68 period when looking on the moon as a young kid, the moon landings as a young kid. This is a cultural change. It was brought about initially by a series of assassinations. One of them in the United States was the assassination of John F. Kennedy, because he was returning to policies of great optimism like Franklin Roosevelt had back in the 30s. They killed him.
So who was behind, this is good stuff, who was behind the assassination of JFK?
Well, you had a whole network, again, a British-based organisation. The Major Mortimer Bloomfield was one of the key guys behind it.
Right.
And this...
did Lee Harvey Oswald pull the trigger?
No, of course not. The reason they had to get rid of John F. Kennedy is because he was moving in the same direction that Franklin Roosevelt was in 1933, and taking on the financial structures at the time and actually returning to America to policies similar to FDR. And that was actually a known reality. They had to get rid of him.
I thought it was about Vietnam.
Well, one of the issues, that was one of the key issues, the singularities, because, of course, JFK did not want to commit the United States to a land war in Asia, and that was on the advice of his great generals like MacArthur and Eisenhower.
Ooh.
Right? But look what's happened since then. You've had a land war in Iraq and a land war in Afghanistan, and the British have played a key role in both, in sending the dumb old giant, as some people referred to the Americans, into battle. So, I mean...
But they didn't start it, though. I mean, that was very much America's war. And then he'll say, hey, who's in?
No, well, so there's a trick with that, too. There was a... go back to look what happened in the original days of the Iraq War. I mean, you had Margaret Thatcher as one of the key players in this, in the era of that idiot George Bush number one, about the Iraqis stealing oil at that point from... Kuwaiti stealing oil, and there was a provocation there when Saddam Hussein shouldn't have invaded Kuwait, and consequently this was a trap for the beginning of getting rid of Saddam Hussein. Look, the quality of standard of living in Iraq was absolutely incredible. I mean, they had free hospital. Free utilities.
Craig? They also had about 5 hours electricity a day, and things aren't any better. I don't think it was a picnic in Iraq back then.
Well, actually, you see, we have a colleague of mine who actually came from Iraq. He works in our office full time.
Right.
So he tells the story of what it was like in Iraq. You know, I mean, Saddam Hussein was a tyrant. Don't get us wrong there. We're not saying that he wasn't. However, he did look after the people.
Mm.
In general, and the state, through the oil revenues, looked after the people in a very great a much better standard of living than anything they've had to suffer through today.
Now, what about Dick Smith? He's come out to say in the last couple of days that he's going to spend the rest of his days fighting fighting against the notion of a big Australia.
Well,
what would you say to him if he was on the phone right now? And I said, Craig, what would you say to him?
Well, he's got a battle on his hands because he's wrong. He doesn't understand physical economy, and he should go back to his electronics, because people are not animals. They never have been. We can make discoveries of principle. We can make discoveries to overcome any problems that relate to our development. The trouble is we haven't. It's been shut down by a political economic policy called globalisation, and people have to wake up to that fact, because if we don't change it, as I said before on your program, we're suffering right now from a global financial crisis which is continuing, and it comes from the same mother, as they say.
All right. Now, Craig, we'll have to leave it there. If people want to find out more, where can they head?
There's pretty volatile issues here, Jeff.
Yeah, we've touched a few. JFK and everything, yes.
Yeah, on our website, www.cecaust.com.au. The 1-800 number is 1-800-636-432. I encourage people to get our emails, like the ones you get, and take it from there.
They're a good read. Thank you, Craig. I'll catch you next week.
Yeah, you're welcome, Jeff.
Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. The open line is 8223-0000. Back after this.
When my producer rang to tell them that we were going to air with this, what happens?